Today we are joined by Mom Bridget Masango.
From barefoot schoolgirl to parliament, what's that all about?
When you have a dream, it doesn't matter what odds are against you, you will do it.
And also Alexandra Abrams, what is SASA?
It's to lift people out of poverty, to give them something to survive on.
Would you say that it's an agency that is living up to what it was formed to do?
Far from it.
No. Would you say that this is sponsored inefficiency, like sponsored chaos?
The NPOs in South Africa are doing 71% of the work of government, statutory work.
It's the political leadership that's wrong.
Hello to everybody at home and welcome to the DA podcast. My name is Nazli Sharif.
My name is Thamsanqa Mabena.
And today we are joined by Mom Bridget Masango, who is the chairperson for the Portfolio Committee in Parliament on Social Development. And also Alexandra Abrams, who is the DA spokesperson for social development. Welcome, ladies, to the DA podcast. What a pleasure and an honor to have you here today. Let's just start, Mom Bridget. How are you and how has it been being part of the GNU?
Good morning and thank you, Naz. You know, being in the GNU has put one in a hopeful situation where you are saying, I can actually use this opportunity to sort of make a contribution towards changing things that, as the Democratic Alliance, we've been trying to change issues, but we've been trying to change them from an opposition sort of space. At the same time, it's a new thing. So you sort of are checking your spaces, you're checking your steps, and you're saying, am I doing the right thing? You know, is it going to make any difference? So it's a very interesting but very hectic environment.
Sure, I can only imagine.
Yes.
And Alex, you served in the previous term in social development, and now you're serving again in social development. What has been the difference between last term and this term?
Well, morning, Nazli, morning, Tami.
Yeah.
I think the biggest difference, and we just came out of a committee strategic planning session yesterday. The biggest difference is having Bridget as our committee chairperson, having someone that understands the portfolio, and having somebody that acts without fear or favour in that position and doesn't allow any of the shielding or devoiding of accountability in that portfolio. So that has been one of the most stark differences, because obviously from the previous term, we had an ANC chairperson with an ANC majority in our committee, and it was sometimes very difficult to bring up issues and to hold the minister accountable in that committee because there was a lot of shielding going on. But with the GNU and with, you know, other parties having committee chairpersons, that accountability mechanism is a lot better. And I'm sure the committees who do have you know, different chairpersons other than the political principal from the same party, they all say the same thing. So that has been one of the biggest differences for me.
Wow. No, I think that's kind of interesting. But I want us to start here a bit. I read a very interesting article from Daily Maverick about Mom Bridget.
Yes.
But maybe she can just give us a bit of background from it. But it's an inspirational article. Maybe you can just give us context, Ma. From barefoot schoolgirl to parliament. What's that all about?
Thanks, Tammy. Thanks for those words. From where, from my home to the school, it was 34 kilometers.
Wow.
Because I'll tell you why I know that. I didn't know then. It was because later I was chatting to a young man at home who was saying to me, Auntie, do you know how long you were traveling? And I said to him, why is this a subject for discussion? He says, no, because I was thinking about you, because he had to drive to my old school. And he took out his phone and he showed me that you were traveling 34 kilometers.
One way.
One way.
Sure.
One way.
Wait. So when you say one way, so does that mean that it's 68 kilometers?
Coming back, yes.
There and back.
Monday to Friday.
Yes.
Wow.
And the other thing that was interesting for me when we were discussing this issue was that my mother reminded me to say, you remember when I woke you up thinking I'm waking you up at 4 o'clock, but it was actually midnight. Mm. And you had to walk all this distance. And I even arrived at school and the sun was still not rising.
Wow.
And I'm standing here, I'm thinking, where is everybody? But for me, what it said was that when you have a dream or you have a vision or you can see yourself somewhere,
yeah,
it doesn't matter what obstacle may be or how high the stakes or odds are against you, you will do it.
Yeah. But at that age, Mamzo, it's quite inspirational. But when you say that you had a dream and a vision, but from at that age, as a young girl in a rural setting, what did that young mom Bridget? Okay, let me say that young Bridget.
No, you know, there was a teacher, a lady teacher, Miss Mkize, who was my teacher, who was teaching us first year. I mean, I don't know, any of you were not born yet, so you won't know what I mean when I say first year. But she was the one that, for me, I was like, I want to be like this lady. She taught us that a lady, saying to us as girls, like young girls at that, a lady doesn't walk like that. A lady doesn't sit like that. Mm-hmm. A lady doesn't talk like that. You can't just laugh just anyhow. And I was like, this lady.
I'm sorry for laughing.
I want to be like her, but I want to be a teacher. That changed later on because I then heard the word public relations officer. And then I suddenly thought, no teacher for me. I'm going to be public relations officer. If anyone were to stop me and say, what does that mean? What job is that? I wouldn't have known. Mm. I just wanted to be a public relations officer because that's what I saw.
Yes.
But you get people around you who represent your dream, who personalize your dream to say, that is who I want to be like. Because when I went to later on, I was given an opportunity to go to high school, and my principal from that school, that far school, had to actually write his personal check for my books, because my mother said, no, you're not doing this now. And my teacher was like, no, she is, because with those results, she can't stay at home.
Mm.
So he drove me to a far school, and a lady who worked for the Rotary Club, and I could not get the Rotary Club bursary. And so this, my teacher who had taken me there, said, well, I can't now. You can't go back home now. You have to go to school. And this lady said, no, she can come and stay with me.
Wow.
Inspirational.
You know? So for me to have been given so many opportunities by just strangers, you know?
Mm.
And I, growing up, I was like, I'm going to pay this forward somehow. So when I got the opportunity to be in Parliament, I was like, that is what I'm talking about.
That's amazing.
You know, that is what I'm talking about, because I may not make a huge difference, but I will have opportunities to make some difference.
Absolutely.
So that is what, you know, a dream grows from just a teacher telling you, you know, this is how you must be and whatever. And then another one saying, no, with those results, you have to go to school. Wow. And then, you know, and each of the opportunities that I've had, even working at the Nelson Mandela Children's Fund, it was to work with children that are vulnerable.
Mm-hmm.
Although it was my job was marketing and communications, but at the end of the day, it was to help children.
Yes, absolutely. I think it's clear that a dream or a vision culminates across many years.
Yes.
And coming into contact with many different people who sort of help push you.
Shape you.
And shape you along that journey. Tell us a little bit about your journey, Alex, and how you found yourself in politics and as an MP.
Well, my journey is almost, I would say, kind of accidental journey, like many people find themselves in politics. When I graduated from Stellenbosch after studying politics, got my honours in politics from Stellenbosch, like many young people, your student loans become due. And I remember sending my CV off to absolutely anybody who would, who I thought would give me opportunity, not waiting to see if there were vacancies. Just sending off CVs, hard copy CVs with postage stamps. Back in the day, you went to Lansdowne Police Station. Opposite the road was the post office, and you went there and you submitted your CV. And in January, I got a call from the Democratic Alliance, and they were looking for an assistant to the Western Cape campaign manager for the 2009 elections.
Okay.
And that person now is David Mania. Well, the MEC for education in the province. He was the campaign manager. And he called me for an interview. My mother still came with me. I think she was more concerned that I would get to the to the interview okay and on time.
That's so nice.
Yeah, and she sat with me there. That's very early. And then I still had to come for a second interview. And the people who interviewed me in that second interview was what we had as in regional directors, Councillor Rose Rao, and our now colleague, Eric Marie, who was our provincial director. And after that, the rest is kind of history.
Okay.
I got the job. And then I worked for a bit within the party, and then I worked for a bit within the Ministry of Social Development in the Western Cape. And then I thought, well, maybe it's time. To see what's life in the political space. I mean, I've always known what it took to be in this position as a public representative. And I said, I don't want to enter into it too young. I first would like to live out my youth outside of the public eye, which I did. And I thought, well, I'm mature enough now, and I can no longer sit on the sidelines and be critical of people who I don't think are pulling their weight if I'm not putting my hand up as well.
Right.
So I decided to put my hand up. And, you know, similar to Bridget, I think even though there's generations between us and probably generations with, you know, other youngsters out there, but role models in education are very important.
Yeah.
And I always wondered, you know, how did David choose my CV out of a stack? There was a stack in his office, and he just needed one person.
Yes.
So there was a stack. And my parents sacrificed a lot to put us through good schooling. Sacrificed a lot. My brother and my sister to put us through good schooling. And I always say I think that was maybe the difference, together with hard work and, you know, and some determination to get us to where we are today. And when I can go back to my communities, and especially the schools in the Cape Flats, and to have the little girls see that someone like them can be a member of parliament, then I become a role model for them.
It's amazing.
So...
That's interesting. But earlier on, you mentioned Lansdowne.
Lansdowne.
So can you tell us a bit, how was it growing up?
Well, so Lansdowne was just our closest police station. There's Athlone Police Station in Lansdowne because our church was in Lansdowne. We'd always use that route. But growing up, you know, my parents, my mother was a primary school teacher at Turfal Primary. She started there at 21 and she retired there. And my parents kept us very sheltered. We maybe could play in the road. We could walk to the 7-Eleven and that was it. And I suppose because we had each other as siblings close in age, we didn't really need, you know, other people. And I mean, we grew up playing school.
Yeah.
And library. So, you know, so we were very sheltered and we had to go to church and Sunday school and all of that. And only afterwards, you know, when you come into the working world, did I actually start realizing, for example, there's this thing called SASSA, for example. Because if you aren't growing up in the environment where you need it, you know, you never actually
know,
you never know about it.
Yeah, it's true.
You know, so, you know, when I do go back home, because now I live on the other side of Cape Town, you can see that things aren't necessarily the same,
mm.
you know. There's been, how can I say that, it just doesn't look the same.
Mm.
You know, there's been some changes and yeah. and things like that. But otherwise,
Big color, bigger savings. It's Sherwin-Williams' biggest super sale. Get 40% off paints and stains October 17th through the 27th with prices starting at $29.39. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online to have it delivered or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.
Positive experience, which is very different to a lot of what our children are experiencing mm. now growing up in those communities,
mm.
you know, where they always have to look after their shoulders. We could walk to school,
of course.
Mm-hmm. You know, as my brother and sister and I, we could walk across the field, across mm. the canal to go mm. to the school.
Yeah.
I don't think I would let my child do that now, even though the school is just 10 minutes away.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, societies so have changed dramatically. Yes. But what I got from both of your stories is that it's not just a job for mm. you. It's a calling
yes.
to be able to serve those more vulnerable.
Yes.
And both of you spoke about going back home
yes.
And sort of trying to give back and pay it forward.
Yes.
And Alex, you mentioned SASSA.
Mm.
Now, for those who don't know, what is SASSA? Because it's just an acronym that people sort of mm. throw out mm. back and forth. But what does it actually mean?
Mm. Yeah. So SASSA stands for the South African Social Security Agency, mm-hmm. developed in 1995, Bridget?
Mm. Yeah.
Or in 2000. How old SASSA? 25 years. So 2004. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a means to provide social protection for the destitute,
mm-hmm.
for the individuals who have no means of income.
Mm.
So for your vulnerable persons, so your senior citizens, that when they've come of retirement age and they can no longer work,
mm-hmm.
that they are cared for by the state. Mm. For your vulnerable mothers, your vulnerable children, so that they are protected, so they get something like a child support grant. For your persons with disabilities or temporary disabilities who actually can't go out and look for work, mm. so that they are protected by means of some sort of financial, mm-hmm. you know, support. Yeah. So that's the intention behind. It's to lift people out of poverty,
mm-hmm.
to give them something to survive on.
Mm.
But over the years, we have seen it become more a suffering, a means of suffering, than really mm. bringing that dignity and bringing that relief that mm. people are so desperately looking for when they turn to the state
mm.
for support. So in a nutshell, yeah, that's us.
So, Mum Bridget, there's a pensioners mm-hmm. grant,
old age grant.
Mm-hmm. There's a child grant,
yes.
a disability grant. What else?
There's a foster child mm-hmm. grant.
Okay.
For foster children yes. that have no parents
mm-hmm.
that are looked after either by strangers or by relatives. And there also is a war veterans grant.
Okay.
Yes. And there's a grant in aid for people that, 24/7 need to be cared for.
Okay.
And they need someone to look after them for, mm-hmm. you know, all the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that that person who is caring would mm-hmm. then get that grant in aid mm-hmm. grant. Yeah, because, and I think it, like Alex was saying, the state, we know that there were grants before,
mm-hmm.
but obviously they were not covering everybody. And if they did, they were not as monthly as, you know, they were for other people. But the state is saying that you could be getting something, but it's not enough for you to live on.
Got you.
Yeah, so then you would get some are means tested so that, you know, there are thresholds. So say if you're getting mm-hmm. less than this, you do still need help for okay. you to get by. And that's where the grants come in.
And just to mention, we forgot about the COVID grant that obviously grant, came
so that's
in.
It. Yeah.
Oh, okay. It's
350 grants. That's
now 370.
Yeah. 370.
But like it sounds, so from what your colleagues are saying, it sounds like the South African Social Security Agency.
Yes.
It's a critical state-owned agency that is entrusted with taking care of the most vulnerable of society. Would you say that it's an agency that is living up to what it was formed
no
to
way.
Do?
Far from it.
No way.
So what is the state of SASSA as an agency?
You know, I was very fortunate that when I joined Parliament, my party, the Democratic Alliance, everybody has been shuffled around, I don't know for how many times. I've just been in social development all the time. So I've had to, and I was reminded this by, not that I had forgotten it, but I was reminded by the head of National Payment Services or of the Reserve Bank yesterday to say, I know, the Chairperson, that you've been there from this times of CPS and so on and so forth. All I have seen with very small pockets of support, of excellence, and so on, all I have seen is suffering of the people that SASSA was created. There is an act of Parliament that was created only to pay, to administer, and to manage grants. But all I have seen are people whose grants are paid late, whose grants are not paid, whose grants are cut, and they don't know why they were cut.
Okay, sorry, Mamzo, just to jump in here. You are mentioning something that is just rubbing me off the wrong way. What Alex was saying and what you were saying, that this agency has to take care of the most vulnerable of society.
Yes.
And they must do that consistently using taxpayers' money.
Yes.
But we are also saying now that there are at times those most vulnerable people, they're actually not paid.
Yes.
That's what you've just said now.
Yes.
Is this an isolated incident or is it a prevalent issue, Alex?
It's prevalent. I mean, whenever we see transitions when it comes to the payment system. And if we go back to the cash payment system, what other abbreviation known as CPS, through that period, we saw so much disruptions. It was a third party tender that the department went out and they SASSA outsourced all their responsibilities.
It's core business.
Yeah, it outsourced their core business to this third party CPS. And it was flagged by the Auditor General, 316 million lost.
What?
Lost. Irregular expenditure.
316 million of South Africans' money.
Yes.
Lost because of a outsourced company. I'm just trying to understand it.
Irregular expenditure, mismanagement
million.
Of funds.
Yeah.
And the interesting part, whenever we sit in meetings with our AG, that figure is always there. And they've been waiting patiently for National Treasury to condone that figure. In other words, write it off as
bad
debts.
How long has this been?
CBS now?
Oh, 2016, 2017. It could easily be that. And that money
was
paid for the work that was not, that had already been done.
So duplication of payment.
And it has not been recovered so far.
No, it has not.
Not been recovered. Will never ever get recovered. The company went into liquidation. Long drama. SASSA doesn't even seem even interested in trying to recoup any of the funds. That money's gone. And now they're just waiting for it to be written off, which I believe it's imminent. I mean, because we heard now the other day. And I think what they're hoping for is that we just forget about it.
And also,
but we won't.
The other part that is most heartbreaking is that the people that were responsible to sign that check and pay that money, for which an invoice must have not been there because the job had already been done and paid for, nothing happened to them.
Nothing happened to them.
Are they still in the department, though?
No,
most of them are not.
Okay.
I have a sense that some that were probably not in higher positions enough to have been made to account are still there. But the fact of the matter is they are not there But they are still in South Africa. They're still alive.
Yeah, and they should be held accountable. I don't understand this idea that if you resign from a government department that you don't get to be held accountable.
Yeah.
Oh, they resign, let's just write it off.
Mm. Yeah.
We should still be able to prosecute people who are stealing people's money. So I just want to take you back. So you said we had the CPS system.
Yes.
Mm. Okay, that obviously didn't work.
No.
Mm-hmm. Then what happened?
Well, then from CPS, then the civil society organizations took the matter to court to say this is an unconstitutionally a sort of people for them to pay these grants. SASSA must pay grants. That's what they were created for. And then when that matter went to court, the constitutional court got rid of CPS, and the post office at the time, not Post Bank, the South African Post Office was the friend of the court when this matter was being dealt with, and then because they are a government entity, the Treasury gave a deviation, allowed for a deviation from calling for people to come and present their tenders and whatever, and said just because the post office is a government entity, they can now take over the payment of grants, because SASSA was not ready.
Mm-hmm.
SASSA, we had not made themselves to be in a space where they can pay grants. So they needed someone.
Okay.
And so the post office also, we were sold as the members of the portfolio committee at the time by the fact that the South African Post Office has a footprint, especially in rural areas. So it made a very good sense that people can get their money from pay points, but they can also get money over the counter.
Okay.
And so that was the next thing. And now when the South African Post Office, I mean, it is just like a soapy.
Yes,
when just
soapy.
After the post office got this got into a master service agreement with SASSA to pay grants, and then the post office went
collapsed.
Yes, started closing offices,
and then offices were closing every day.
So that left SASSA in another difficult situation.
In another doing.
They'd say the money would arrive at the post office only for the driver to find, but their post office is closed.
Yeah.
Oh,
so where are they taking the money?
But let's backtrack a bit.
There's a lot here. Eh? How much time do you have?
Okay,
sure.
So we are saying that service providers are bringing cash, the grants, to a pay point, to a service point, only for them to arrive.
Mm-hmm.
And only at that time when they arrive, it's closed.
Yes.
Nah, man, that's crazy.
And so they take the money back.
They take money elsewhere. Like, move on to the next point. And remember that they would go from point to point to point.
Mm.
So individuals would wait from early hours of the morning at their different post offices, not knowing when that truck is getting to them, if that truck is getting to them, and if there will still be money
left
in that truck to get to them.
Mm-hmm.
All right? So some of them would be turned away and never ever receiving their money, having to wait for next month.
Yeah.
What are they doing? What are they eating?
Yes.
What are they giving
their
children?
How are they surviving?
Yes.
From month
and
month.
And remember, when we're giving you which category of people are they that are getting money, we talked about the older persons.
Yes.
They take medication.
Yes.
They need ablution facilities.
Mm-hmm.
They this, they that, they the other. And when they don't know when the truck is going to come with their money, what is happening to them?
Mm. Okay, so then that happens.
Exactly.
Yeah. After that, so now SASSA then realizes, okay, post offices might not be the best way to do it.
And
what do they do then?
And then they cede the MSA to Post Bank.
Post Bank.
Yes.
Okay.
So then there's another transition.
Hmm. And so this was a new transition, fairly new, right?
Yeah, it's new if you talk about, you know,
a couple of years.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Mm. So they see the master service agreement to Post Bank. So Post Bank starts paying. But obviously, we all know that Post Bank does not have any offices.
Mm-hmm.
And so they were still using the post offices that were left after they were closing in droves. And so people would get their money from banks. They will get money from retailers and so on and so forth. And then came this changing of the cards because it was realized by the Reserve Bank that the security of the gold cards was compromised.
This changing of the cards, can I just say, this changing of the cards caused so much chaos and panic. People didn't know what was happening because they were going from gold cards to black cards.
Yes.
And there was a time.
Yes.
And people were thinking they're not
deadline.
Deadline.
They kept on being moved.
Yeah. And the panic, the stress. Mm. People, we were getting messages to say older persons were just collapsing.
What?
Yeah.
They were just collapsing because they are standing there. They don't want to go home. Because the deadline is looming and they want their black cards because also what this whole saga is forgetting is that with the high unemployment in this country that is growing every day, gogos are the ones now that are breadwinners again.
Imagine if today was the day your idea changed someone's life. Imagine if you could help someone pay for college, help your community build a new playground, or help a child make it to that dream competition. With GoFundMe, it's all possible. GoFundMe is the world's number one fundraising platform trusted by over 190 million people. Every week, ordinary people meet their goals and do extraordinary things. Your ideas matter. GoFundMe isn't just for emergencies. Want to raise money for your kid's soccer team or raise funds for a small business, a creative project, or event? GoFundMe helps you turn ideas into reality. And help adds up. Fundraisers you start for someone else raise up to 5 times more. So think right now, who could use your help? Change rarely comes from waiting. It comes from someone deciding, today I'll start. Don't wait for someone else to bring change. Today, start your fundraiser in just minutes at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com to start your fundraiser. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
At home with the grant.
Gotcha. Mm.
So if the gogo carrying this whole load of taking care of the family goes to a site where she's supposed to get her card and she gets an indication that she might not get it.
Mm.
That means that there's no food on the table when she gets back home.
Mm-hmm. But not just that, she's borrowed money, transport money
to come here.
To come there.
Yes.
She can't go back empty-handed because there's no money to go back and pay the transport that she's already owing.
Yeah.
So that then they end up sleeping in the queue until they get there.
And add to the cards being swabbed, add the conditions, the verifications of identity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You have to get the new card. You have to verify that you are the right person for this card. Mm-hmm. That is just adding on to the stress and the trauma and the angst and the frustrations. We said that SASSA was created so that with dignity, these people must get this money.
Mm-hmm.
The government, South Africa, is saying, South Africans, taxpayers are saying, these people must at least get something in their old age because they have worked in this country their whole lives.
Their whole lives. They have contributed to building this country.
Yes, the statistics of malnutrition among children.
Shocking.
It's shocking.
Mm-hmm.
So the government, the taxpayer again, is saying, let's make sure that these children have something to eat, at least something decent to eat. We know it's far below, as the Democratic Alliance, we've said, increase this grant for the children, at least to the lower bound a poverty line. But it has not gone to that. At least they must at least get what it is that is now being available for them. But and also, even that is a problem.
Also with this whole thing, it sounds like it's inefficiency at the grand scale.
Sure.
But would you say that this is sponsored inefficiency, like sponsored chaos? In a way, because, I mean, it just doesn't make sense. Something as critical as... So let me give you an example. Ne?
Mm.
And this is the wrong example to make, but I'm going to make it anyway.
Mm.
You see, and I'm not promoting this company, but the South African breweries, they deliver...
No, they deliver.
In the most remote areas.
Yeah.
Anywhere in South Africa, on time, it's seldom you go to any of those happy places, and you find that either they're out of stock or the worst possible excuse you can get when you get there is that there's load shedding and your warm. Stuff is not cold.
Mm.
But South African breweries is on time. But if there's so much efficiency in the private sector and we are almost catering into a market where there's no need, but obviously there's a demand. But with something as critical as this, would you say that this is a sponsored chaos, sponsored inefficiency?
25 years is a long time to keep getting it wrong.
Bridget and I spend a lot of time talking about SASSA. And, you know, the one thing we always need to remember, annually, SASSA gets to approximately 220 billion rand.
264.
Is it 264?
264 billion rand
annually for SASSA. And one would then think that if the systems all were in place, if there was a footprint, a digital footprint, if there was modernization, would corruption and would theft and would fraud
thrive
in that environment? And the answer is no. So over the years, it's almost as if it's a deliberate
plan. So it
responds to chaos that the systems don't work.
Yeah.
Because we can't be having the same queues for year and year and year with plans and plans and plans that seem fantastic, that will solve the problem, but just not being implemented.
Yeah.
And it's the easiest, one of the easiest entities from which corruption and fraud can take place.
Yeah.
And if we just go back to the cash pay points, that was cash.
Yeah.
There's no checks and balances there. When a beneficiary came to the post office and there was a mysterious outage, electricity outage, and I mean, this was confirmed again just this week in our committee meeting.
Mm.
There was no control to say, Tami is the right beneficiary that I'm handing this money over to. They were just handing out money.
Oh my.
With no checks and no controls and and no anything. So 264 billion is a very lucrative pot to take from.
That's insane.
And from the poor. Stealing from the destitute.
Yes. And if you say to me that there is an act that establishes an entity for this particular reason. Surely there must be some monitoring.
Has to be.
To say, this is how you are going to pay this money. This is how you are going to manage this money. This is how you are going to administer this money. But 20 odd years later, SASSA, I think now that we are hearing that all the monies are now in people's accounts, and those are the people they are verifying their identities of, that SASSA has managed or is managing to pay money into people's account, which is why the master service agreement has to come to an end.
Yeah, I was just going to ask about that. We read an article that the minister has now said that the master service agreement with Postbank is coming to an end in September. What does that mean? And what does it mean for people who need to get grants?
It actually doesn't mean anything. we were made to believe this. And if you listen to the logic that is being given, it is to say, if SASSA is paying my money as an older person, into my account, I don't need a Postbank. And the person who gets the grant from a Postbank account, they don't need Postbank for that to happen. They just need to get their card, to take their card to a retailer, to another bank, and so on and so forth, and withdraw their money. So the minister, this is how the minister, to a certain extent, I understood what she was saying. She was saying, this is an administrative arrangement. Mm. Remember, this master service agreement was signed into existence between SASSA and the post office at the time. And in it, there are obviously exit clauses. And the exit clause is saying that either party can terminate it by giving the other one 18 months. And they tried to, SASSA, this is, tried to give them 6 months, and they said, no, you are out of the master service agreement. We need 18 months. And SASSA said, okay, you're getting 18 months. So that 18 months is coming to an end.
So
you have to explain it to me like I'm a 5-year-old, yeah. Right?
Yes.
Because it seems like it's very confusing. So they then say, Sasa then says, you have to go from a gold card to a black card.
Yeah. Yes.
And that was stressful. Now they say, oh, it doesn't even matter if you have a black or gold card. So it was all for nothing.
So Nazli, the one point that I've been asking in every meeting is that in the social assistance regulations, there's always been a clause. Yes, it's been amended a few times. It was first regulation 21.1, and now it's regulation 23.1. Mm. And in that regulation, it lays out that, and it's always been there, that the beneficiary can choose the payment method of their choice. Mm. The beneficiary has always had a choice as to where they want their grant to be paid in. Mm. And that was never ever properly communicated. It was never marketed by SASSA. Mm. It's only now that things are going a bit haywire. Mm-hmm. You use nice words, yeah? That now they are saying, oh, here's this other option that always existed, but we never ever marketed and told the people about it because they needed the MSA to work between the two government entities. And now it's because it's convenient, they pushing it for that. So the question I have is that why then go into all these agreements when that was always there, when we could always use the banks and the banks were more reliable, more credible, had a bigger footprint than what your Postbank had. Because remember, Postbank didn't even have all the relevant licensing, the required licensing. And the only reason they went with Postbank was because during CPS time, there was an era of unlawful deductions. Mm. People's monies were being taken off without them giving consent illegally.
Isn't the CPS the one that got paid 360 million?
Same CPS.
Yes.
Maybe can I just ask this question? This SASSA person, in which department does this belong? Who is he, like, who oversees SASSA?
Yeah, the Department Social Development.
And who's the political principal? Because that is the person that we must nail to the stake because they're obviously letting things fall.
Well, it is the Minister Dolashe.
Of Social Development.
Yes.
Previously, Minister Lindiwe Zulu, and before that, during CPS era, Matabele Dlamini.
Wait, isn't this the same time where Matabele Dlamini was on a helicopter sponsored by one of the service providers?
Exactly.
Was it CPS?
Yes.
That's where the 300 million went.
A helicopter ride.
Hi, Bo.
No, I mean, the ANC is a mess.
It is a huge mess. And just, we were talking with Alex just now to say, and rightfully, this discussion is we are spending so much time on SASSA because of the heart-wrenching stories that you hear from people. When I wake up in the morning, every morning, whether it is Saturday or Sunday or Monday or Tuesday, I wake up to no less than, let me say on a good day, to no less than 200 WhatsApps and 156 emails.
Wow.
And then in between, I'll be getting calls.
Of queries.
Of queries.
And of
grant recipients who raise their hands to say, I don't know what to do anymore. And a person will say, oh, please, can you phone the DA. And then they phone the DA and the DA says, oh, here's the number. You can phone this, our member of parliament. Mm. And the DA has actually not just let us, as the members of the portfolio committee, sort this thing out. But the DA actually has a public liaison officer in Parliament who is absorbing all these queries and is liaising with SASSA to actually sort out these things. But what about a person who doesn't know about Bridget and Alex? What about a person who doesn't know about Imelda in the office? Mm. What about a person who doesn't know even to contact the DA, who's just saying, what am I going to do?
Well, they're going to know after this podcast. Hopefully.
Also, the other thing that I just read, and as you mentioned, the article there, I just read something this past week that there was a minister, things from social development, they went to New York or something.
Yeah.
They spent $3 million.
How nice it must be.
And then now you guys here are saying that you've got elderly people who are in queues overnight, collapsing.
Yeah. Outrageous.
Yeah.
It's simply outrageous. I'm sorry. You can't be going on a 3 million rand trip, staying in 5-star hotels while people are collapsing and dying here at home because you are unable to pay their money. It's not okay.
And you just went on a joyride to New York.
Screw that, man.
It's unacceptable. Because, I mean, Tami, you say we spend so much time on SASSA, but there's a whole other department of social development that's supposed to deal with welfare services. And that is your substance abuse, it's your gender-based violence, your shelters, your children in need of care and protection and so forth, crime prevention strategies and, you know, disabilities, older persons, all of that, and particularly NGOs.
Yes.
And every year we go through the same problem of NGOs having their funding cut.
Yeah.
Because there's not enough money.
Yes.
Yeah. We can't get more social workers. There's not enough money.
Yeah.
SASSA offices are operating at less than, some of them, 50% staff capacity because there's not enough money.
Mm. What does that mean? 50% capacity. What does that mean?
There's not enough people in the office.
Yeah, there's 50% employees in local offices of SASSA.
Okay. And the staff establishment.
Yeah. So is there any wonder then that you will have all those long queues that are winding behind the buildings in rain, in sun, in wind, in whatever, if the people that they are going to get there inside the offices are at 50%?
Why?
You ask me?
Are we only working at 50% capacity?
You know, Tami was saying earlier on that is this sponsored chaos? I think that very, very seriously, I think that this is just lack of political will.
Mm. Yeah, no. You know, also just while on that, you know, I'm from Gauteng.
Yeah, same.
Imagine if today was the day your idea changed someone's life. Imagine if you could help someone pay for college, help your community build a new playground, or help a child make it to that dream competition. With GoFundMe, it's all possible. GoFundMe is the world's number one fundraising platform trusted by over 190 million people. Every week, ordinary people meet their goals and do extraordinary things. Your ideas matter. GoFundMe isn't just for emergencies. Want to raise money for your kid's soccer team or raise funds for a small business, a creative project, or event? GoFundMe helps you turn ideas into reality. And help adds up. Fundraisers you start for someone else raise up to 5 times more. So think right now, who could use your help? Change rarely comes from waiting. It comes from someone deciding, today I'll start. Don't wait for someone else to bring change. Today, start your fundraiser in just minutes at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com to start your fundraiser. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
Yeah, unfortunately, man.
It's not a flex. It's not a flex at all.
Yeah. Look, we love our team, but watch out of the government that is there.
But 2026, you never know.
We're praying very hard.
And we're going to work very, very hard. But there was also a scandal in Gauteng with NPOs.
Yes,
ongoing scandal
where NPOs are seemingly also milking it with all of that money that is meant to go to vulnerable children.
Yeah.
Can you just give us maybe like a bit of background? What is that? What is these NPOs? Why are we having a situation where actually non-profit organizations who are supposed to win, who are supposed to be doing good work for the community and who are supposed to be selfless in a way, who are supposed to be standing in the gap of this inefficiency, but they find themselves at the center of this? Because now we're speaking about, is it politically sponsored? Is it anywhere where we've got the hands, maybe? Not that there's any anything confirmed, but of politicians, NPOs, like, can you just give us a bit of background about these NPOs? What is happening?
You know, when you have time, you must get Refilwe and Sege on this podcast.
Okay.
Because the issue of NPOs, NPO funding in Gauteng epitomizes what you have just said, this political sponsorship of wrongdoings. There was a situation where the previous MEC of social development. I think it was Mbali.
Mbali Hlophe.
You would have seen the scenes where the NPOs, the ones that are doing work, protesting at her offices because people were asked to sign service level agreements. And those service level agreements obviously have dates, timelines in them, but they wouldn't be getting money.
And they've done the work.
And the work that we're talking about is people. Those are persons with disabilities that they are looking after. Those are children, often vulnerable children. Those are people with mental illnesses that they are looking after. People you cannot afford for one day or for 1 hour not to feed, not to wash, not to give medication, whatever it is. And those people didn't get money. The NPOs were closing doors, Tammy. Yes,
so, okay, so, Mamzu, so, okay, maybe let's just backtrack a little bit here. Earlier on, you said the beneficiaries were not receiving money.
Yes.
We've got people who are doing work who are supposed to be assisting the department.
Yes.
Also not receiving money.
Exactly. Yep.
You've got companies which are linked to politicians, ANC politicians.
That are getting the money.
Driving 16 million rands for doing absolutely
nothing.
No work.
Exactly. That is what I'm saying.
This is crazy.
Can I just tell you also, when we are talking about what you are saying now, Tammy, that the people that are, this is crazy how it works. We learned that the NPOs in South Africa are doing 71% of the work of government, statutory work.
They're a partner. 71% of social development.
Yes. They're doing 71%.
So basically majority of the work
Is done by NPOs.
And yet you're not paying the same NPOs.
And then you're not paying the same NPOs. No, go ahead.
No, are you sure?
Yeah, go ahead.
I just wanted to say, and then on the thing when it comes to the provinces, each province is obviously responsible for their own political budget.
Okay.
So national department has very little scope to say to the province what your priority areas are, what you must spend the money on. And of course, some provinces do it very well, but other provinces clearly don't. And if we can just make the comparison between the Western Cape. The Western Cape does what they can to ensure that the NGOs are paid. Not always perfect, not always enough, because the budget cuts come from the top. As we know, budget cuts come from national, filters down and so forth. But when it comes to NGOs, what they do differently, and I still don't know why Gauteng doesn't do it. Their motive is unknown to us. And that is, in the province, they pay their NGOs on contracts, like a three-year contract, you know? And that gives the NGO security to plan their year.
And scope.
And scope and, you know, room to breathe and room to do their work and to sign into that lease agreement for their shelters and, you know, things like that. Where Gauteng does their contracts on a year-to-year basis. Now, that's an administrative hectic job.
It's a nightmare.
Because you must do call for proposals, sorting through proposals every single year. So one of the easiest solutions they can implement there is to extend that term, their contract with their NGOs, to at least 3 years. And if they don't want to do it with all the NGOs, at least do it with the partners that you know are your long-standing institutional partners that you can't do this work without. And that's just would help address some of the issues they have there. So,
But the other thing with along that same logic is that although they are doing it every year, the NGOs still try and make sure that they submit
in time
their reports.
But they don't get paid.
But they don't get paid because they say, oh, page 16 is not there.
So you know, to bring it to reality, I served a bit of a stint in Gauteng. And there have been NGOs that have closed their doors, NGOs that have had to let staff go, which means, for example, GBV shelters, victim support rooms had to essentially close down. For example, Power, one NGO that had to completely close because they just weren't getting the funding. Now, with GBV being such a major, major issue in our country, we cannot afford
Yeah.
To play with the people's money like this. And that brings me back, you know, working with SASSA. Mm. But social development, as you said, Alex, covers so much more than just SASSA.
Yeah.
So I want to ask you about social workers.
Yeah. Mm.
Do we have enough social workers in our country for the population?
No, we don't. Yesterday.
How many?
We're supposed to require 55,000.
55,000. Mm. And that is based on the... Oh.
What's the number now?
The number now is sitting... Far less than that.
Far less than that.
But also, I raised this yesterday when we were doing the strategic planning of the department of the portfolio committee that that 55,000 is according to the NDP.
Mm-hmm.
That was
national development plan.
Yes, that was done in 2012.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So that was 55,000 in 2012. That was a target for 2030, but it was done based on what was happening in 2012. That was before COVID.
My goodness.
That was before the GBV statistics have gone so high. That was before the drug and illicit substance has gone so high. Mm. That was before the social ills deepened to a level where they are now.
Yeah.
You can find that if someone went back and said and used the same statistics that they were using in 2012, they will find that the target actually has shifted.
No, it has shifted.
Yeah.
Definitely.
And our social workers, just like some of our police officers, their caseloads are humongous.
Yes.
They've got so much caseloads to get through. You ask yourself, how are they actually giving enough time to each of these critical cases?
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing, they don't have the resources. And if you think above a social worker, the homes that they are having to go and conduct their home visits in, it's in dangerous areas. You know, so our social workers are also getting robbed.
Yeah.
And they're being targeted. They are now even being, what's the word I'm looking for? Where they solicit money out of you.
Extorted.
Mm. That's the word I'm looking for now. Mm. So now they sometimes even have to wait for police escorts before they can go
and do
the work they're doing.
That makes me so
and
angry.
And then there's a child over there that's been murdered or abused and whatever.
Yes.
And you have a social worker due to the crime and the volatile situation have to wait for a police service that's already understaffed, might not even come before they can even go and do their work. So they don't have the resources. There's not enough, but we are going on 3 million rand.
But
trips,
like when?
No, but sorry, Tammy. Yeah. I wanted to say, remember that there are 9,000 social workers that were trained by government of South Africa. They were taken through a 4-year degree by the Department of Social Development.
Okay.
They are sitting at home, unemployed. I'm telling you. That is what is happening.
And then going back to the NGOs, remember NGOs also have, most of them have a social worker component.
Correct. Yes.
And sometimes the subsidy that the departments are supposed to do is to fund that social worker. So that's what the funding will be, a social worker or social auxiliary worker post. But then the other thing that comes in, it's also important in the economic climate that we're living in, that they're also underpaid.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So especially in the NGOs, they're even more underpaid than your government social workers.
Yes.
So it's also becoming an area where not many people want to get into, because now there's no jobs. It's an emotionally taxing a job to do, and you aren't being compensated in the manner that you actually should for a profession that's supposed to see the upliftment of our communities.
With these 9,000
unemployed social workers.
They are unemployed. Something is very wrong.
The system is broken.
It's the political leadership that's wrong.
Yes.
Yeah.
Nah, that's got you.
And those people would write to us and say, ma'am, if you hear of anything... I mean, I'm not even in the social work environment to hear, but they are just so desperate that they will ask anyone and everyone. Some of them are tellers in retail stores. Mm. Some of them are cleaning people's homes with their 4-year degree. Can you imagine a country that ranks among the highest for drug and illicit substance abuse, for GBV, for all sorts of social ills? having the people that you need to do that sitting at home.
No, no,
it makes me sick to my stomach.
To check how many social workers we could have employed with that 316 million rands.
Yeah. Or the 3 million that yeah. she used yeah. to travel gallivanting across the world. It enrages me to my core.
And also for how long? You would have employed them for a number of years.
Exactly.
Not for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Exactly.
For that money. And they would be getting, I don't know if colleagues remember, a few years ago when in Bloemfontein, the social workers did not have office space to work from. So they were working from the boot of the few cars that were available to them in the parking lot.
Can you imagine that? Nah. Out of your car.
Having their confidential files.
Mm-hmm.
Confidential files of people's issues working from the boot of their car.
But this is a department in crisis. Does the political leadership actually understand that this department is actually in crisis mode?
Do they like, care?
Every term of the terms that I've been here, I have always, and the my party has allowed this, that I have always said to myself, let us give this new person credit. They will withdraw that credit for themselves. And the last year, when the minister was appointed, the same thing was happening because the minister gave us an undertaking. We will employ people. And she has. She has employed people in high offices because we were, Alex was actually the one who was harping on this to say, if you have an acting person, that person will not take accountability. Mm-hmm. That person will not make decisions. That person will not plan. Mm-hmm. And so the minister has employed the senior persons, yes, and director generals and all sorts of things. But we are still waiting for other things that have been, you know, undertakings have been made to be done. But I'm saying, if you had, like you have been saying, Tammy and Naz, if you have a person that sees the people behind the 264 billion rand and see the people who are struggling, who will not just see paper and tick the boxes and whatever, you will have a different results altogether.
Yeah.
But also earlier on, Alex, you mentioned a solution in a DA run Western Cape with regards to NPOs. You said that unlike in Gauteng,
hot solution.
In the Western Cape, the DA does 3-year contracts with them. Are there other DA solutions to this problem? How do we fix social development, giving DA examples, or maybe how do we begin to turn this tide around?
Sure. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the example that I've been using very often is actually one that sits at national government and sucks because of the GNU.
Weight loss solutions are not one size fits all. Hers makes it simpler to get started and stick with a weight loss plan backed by expert-guided online care that puts your weight loss goals first. These include oral medication kits or compounded GLP-1 injections. Through Hers, pricing for oral medication kits start at just $69 a month for a 10-month plan when paid in full upfront. No hidden fees, no membership fees. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hers brings expert care straight to you with 100% online access to personalized treatment plans that put your goals first. Reach your weight loss goals with help through Hers. Get started at forhers.com/foryou to access affordable, doctor-trusted weight loss plans. That's forhers.com/foryou, forhers.com/foryou. Paid for by Hims and Hers Health. Weight loss by Hers is not available everywhere. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Restrictions at forhers.com. Apply.
And that is our colleague, Leon Schreiber, Minister Leon Schreiber at Home Affairs. Mm-hmm. And when we talk about political will, if Leon can turn Home Affairs around, then the right person at the Department of Social Development can turn that department around.
Okay.
So it is a leadership crisis, and especially even when you have a deputy minister. I don't know if colleagues remember in our last in-person sitting of parliament in the previous term, we have a deputy minister that publicly said in parliament that there is no hunger in this country.
There's zero hunger.
There's zero hunger
joking?
In this country.
Yes.
He has no idea what colleagues are complaining about. If there's all, I'm paraphrasing now. Mm-hmm. If there's all these social grants, there's zero hunger.
No way.
That is.
Can you be that unaware?
That is a deputy minister responsible for social development that's so devoid of reality that is actually it's just not right. You know, and I can have a few colourful words, but let me rephrase from saying it. So how to fix SASSA? Firstly, what the DA has been calling for is an SIU investigation into the payment and
what
the
is SIU again?
The Special Investigation Unit. Mm-hmm. And they're an independent entity that has powers to investigate, summons, to order, to just do a full-blown investigation.
So like the police sort of special
Well, more
force.
Like what we're trying to do with our Scorpions 2.0,
okay.
You know, completely independent of the department, and they can just run the investigation.
Okay.
And then to root out corruption and to couple that with our lifestyle audits and with our vetting of the officials, because what we've seen also recently, that part of the problem is officials within the offices. They are the ones committing fraud. I mean, they're 13 now from Gauteng that's in court for over 260 million rand worth of fraud, stealing from SASSA.
Yes.
So to set those examples and to get those people out of the system so that we're left with the people who actually are honest and want to do the work within the SASSA system. And I think another solution would be to actually get on with the business of implementing the modernization plan of SASSA.
Yes.
And that is the question I always ask is, why does SASSA not have an online appointment booking system in the same way Home Affairs has a system?
Or the licensing department.
Yeah. Or anything. And because, I mean, what SASSA is currently doing now, you arrive there very early, you stand in your queue, and you come there, but you don't have an appointment for that day. Their solution is to give you a ticket to come back 2 months later. So you've already stood in that queue, wasted your money to come there, only to be told to come back. That can be done online. And yes, not everybody has access, but they may have a neighbour, there's a library, there's us as public reps. They can spend the day and helping people do
so
that.
You're saying queue management, that would be one of the solutions in terms of how do we fix the queue management situation.
I mean, colleagues, DA colleagues here in Cape Town, in the city of Cape Town, were busy helping people, counselors, helping people with the swapping of cards.
Yes, okay. for the bank accounts. So they invited the banks, whichever banks wanted to come to a venue. They fill in the forms, the banks are there, they can choose whichever bank they want to do. And that was our way just to assist people. They didn't have to go stand in that post-bank queue. But they had their choice. And I mean, that's in our constitution, self-autonomy. And that includes self-autonomy over your own finances. Just because you are poor or living in poverty doesn't mean that you don't have the right to decide for yourself on what to do with your 370 rand, as little as it is. It is yours and you get to decide what to do.
But this is amazing. So the Democratic Alliance led City of Cape Town, which is a local government, has actually nothing to do with this. They've taken it upon themselves to invite banks.
Because,
you know, the DA cares.
Yes.
And I think the City of Cape Town cares. And I think this is some of the inspirational stories. I mean, I'm sorry to say this, colleagues, but you've just been depressing us here. All of this.
I thought I was going to throw some meat around.
But this is amazing, you know. And like, it also just shows that, and Mamzo, earlier on you mentioned about political will.
Yeah.
And here is the political will from a local sphere of government.
Yes.
And it's amazing what the DA does and what we're able to do.
And that's the other thing, partnerships. I mean, once again, just like what Leon's doing with the banks, there are certain functions within SASSA that doesn't need to happen at the SASSA office. Why do I need to go to a SASSA office to get a confirmation letter that I receive a SASSA grant? There's another way to do that, and I'm sure there are partners outside that would love to come on board to help SASSA with things like that. So,
And I mean, I was just saying that what keeps one going is the fact that one is a member of the Democratic Alliance. Because when you hit obstacles and walls that are just stacked against you in trying to do your work. You have all you have to do is just to go back to the DA principles and how you want to do things. And it gives you, you know, some kind of a motivation to say, one day this will come to fruition. And you have to go to places like the Western Cape. Like, I mean, I am in constant contact, obviously, with Yaku Londe,
of course,
who is the MEC for social development here. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the things that he is doing that are not in his job description, mm-hmm. but because he knows that there are people. These are people that we're dealing with. Mm-hmm.
So we spoke about queue management solutions. Mm-hmm. What do we do about people not getting paid or not getting their grants? How do we solve that issue?
Mm-hmm. Well, the issues have to be brought to us. Mm-hmm. They have to let us know. And we have a PLO in our offices in the Marks Building in Cape Town that gets queries from throughout the country. Mm-hmm. That is not enough, mm-hmm. I understand. Mm-hmm. But it does make a dent in the crisis that people are in. Mm-hmm. I mean, the colleagues in communities, in the councillors, the members of the provincial legislatures have been contacting us to say, please help here. That is not sustainable. Mm-hmm. The numbers are huge. Mm-hmm. The frustration and the desperation is deep, mm-hmm. especially in rural areas, which is where we are concerned about.
Especially because, essentially, it's not our responsibility doing that, right?
It's not.
It's the ANC's responsibility to be doing that.
We are using on a daily I can't say on a daily basis, but on a monthly, on a weekly basis, we are using the oversight mechanisms of Parliament, where we ask questions, we issue statements, we do member statements, we do all sorts of things because we're saying.
I think for me, honestly, that's not enough. I think the ANC needs to be punished, Mama.
I agree.
Yes.
And I think until we get to a point where we realize that all these horror stories that we're hearing now, it's as a result of a political party that has people that don't have the best interest of the most vulnerable, the poorest of the poor out there.
Yes.
And yet we're going into elections, people giving that party some sort of a mandate.
Yeah.
If there's one thing that perhaps is clear, I mean, you've got a DA-led city of Cape Town, a local government municipality stepping in, filling in the gap of a failed ANC national department run by ANC comrades and cadres.
You have a minister of public works and infrastructure, Edwin McPherson, who comes in and he finds buildings that are not being used. And then he goes to provinces to say, here, social development, you can use these buildings for shelters. You can renovate them, you can develop them, you can use them for shelters for women who are victims of GBV and so on and so forth. In Cape Town, those buildings are used in Western Cape. In Gauteng?
They're still standing.
They're standing.
But you know, Tommy, I suppose that's just the organization and the people we are as public reps. Mm. Even though it's not our mandate or responsibility, we can't just throw up our hands and say, not my problem.
Precisely. Mm.
We make it our problem, and where we can, we step in, you know. So that's just, I suppose, our organization, that we'll always step in and we'll never leave people to just be destitute and defend for themselves, because that's why they voted for us.
Yes.
Yeah.
To represent to them. And we just can only wish that more people vote for us so that we can represent them better and in bigger numbers.
I mean, there are processes, if I can go back to SASSA, there are processes to verify you so that you are known to be the right recipient of a grant. Mm-hmm. I had a young lady call me the other day to say, sorry, ma'am, I need to stop my grant now because I've got a job. I said, oh, this is good. Go to SASSA. And SASSA says, we don't have a process for that.
But also talking about stopping... But also, while on the stopping of a SASSA grant, you know, remember that every time when we do door to doors, especially in Gauteng, they always accuse us as the day that if we ever, ever touch national government power, we're going to take away social grants. Yeah. Mam Bridget is here as the chairperson of the Portfolio Committee of Social Development. We've got ministers in government. So when are you guys taking away social grants from people?
Yay. And we are the ones that are working with people to get their grants. The people that are eligible to get grants, we fight on a daily basis.
So basically it's a myth, it's nonsense.
It is a myth, and I actually don't know where it comes from.
It's electioneering ploy. It's enshrined in the Constitution.
Yes.
Nobody can take it away, regardless of which political party is in power. If anything, if we had more power, we'd practice more financial discipline. And in the end, there would be actually more money for grants, you know?
The DA now, in our social development policy, we are saying there should be grants for mothers that are pregnant.
Yes, there should be.
So that as they are pregnant, by the time they give birth to a child, is healthy.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Because we have a 28.2% stunting rate in South Africa.
Sure.
We're wanting grants for young people who are 18 but have not finished matric. We are saying you can't just dump that person on their birthday or on their 18th birthday, because how are they going to live until they finish matric? We are saying increase the child support grant. How then can we take grants away?
I think also one other critical component, I think what the party has also been saying, it's as much as it is important to create a social security safety net, we must always strive. I think the party launched a turbocharged economy now.
Yes.
The objective, as you are saying, Mamzo, is to get more people working, working dignified jobs, so that we remove a lot of people from dependency, and so that people can be self-sufficient and they can fend for themselves. So the party for the longest time, even with this six-point plan of growing the economy, we're saying that if the economy could grow at an 8%, it will be a job-creating economy. So the ultimate objective, no one sits at home and says, I want to receive a 350.
For the rest of my life.
I want to receive
a 400 rand.
And I think also this also ties in with the work that the party has been doing in terms of what is this thing where they say that you can't pay your workers X amount of money. But if you've got a situation where someone can be receiving a 350, but then
The minimum wage.
Yes, a minimum wage, and then there's a company that's willing to invest in creating jobs, but they're able to pay whatever that they can pay.
Yes.
It's better than receiving 850 rand. So I think the party has been steadfast in there to say, let's create, let's grow the economy, let's turbocharge the economy.
But not just that, you get work and experience. Yes. And a lot of our youth don't have work experience.
Yes. Yes.
So that's very important for them to get, just to get the foot in the door. And that's why, like I say, the school completion grant, it's so many young people drop out. Once the grant stops, the child support grant stops when they turn 18, they drop out of school because there's no extra money. They may have to go work. There's no money to get them to school. And because the schooling system of the last 30 years has deteriorated, so we can't necessarily blame that child of why maybe they started late, why they failed a year, you know, crime, maybe they were the gangsters were shooting and they couldn't, you know, go to school and all those reasons. So you can't blame the South African child of why they're not 18 in matric.
No, for sure.
Right? So with, and then with that matric certificate, to support them to just get that matric certificate gives them at least some chance in that job market, because there are so many jobs that you need that matric certificate to get. So that's why it's, and it's the numbers are not many.
No.
You know, so that's like a tangible thing that can be done.
Yes.
Okay. So just to understand, the DA is saying we are not going to cancel social grants. In fact, we want to increase social grants and add more social grants.
Yes, we are going to be efficient in the paying of social grant, but also with the turbocharge, with the economy growing in such a way that there are more and more businesses opening and affording people jobs that will give them dignified salaries, the amount of grants for the people that cannot work. We're talking about older persons. We're talking about persons with disabilities. Mm-hmm. Those are the people that will be on grants now because they have worked all their lives. Now they are on retirement. Mm-hmm. So if more and more people get out of the grant queues into jobs and are able to look after their families with dignified salaries, that money is going to be diverted to the older persons. It's going to be diverted to the older persons. It's going to be diverted to the young people that are still in school when they turn 18. It's going to be diverted to the mothers that are pregnant and are going to give birth. So it is a case of willpower from the political leadership. It is a case of remembering all the time that you're dealing with the actual people. These are not just numbers. These are not just statistics. It's breathing South Africans.
Real life people.
Yes.
And just for clarity, Nazli, we're also not saying that we're going to do this by increasing tax. Absolutely opposite. Okay. I mean, that's the ANC's idea for the
election.
The election carrots and thing for their basic income grant to say, oh, more grants because we're going to increase tax. Absolutely not. As South Africans, we're already taxed to death. But through means of, rooting our corruption and the savings in misadministrations, 360 million that could have been saved with CPS, the 260 million that could have been saved if we had the right officials in the jobs.
Yes.
All that money that's been absolutely thrown down the drain due to that irregular expenditure, there is money there to support the policies that we have.
Yes.
So just because before people say we're increasing grants, we'll increase tax.
Just set the record straight.
Because a lot of people have a fear that people think that because we have such a shrinking tax base and the social grant base base just seems to be growing.
Yeah.
And it's growing because unemployment and poverty is growing.
Yeah.
The cost of food is ridiculous. I mean, I was saying, even I go to the shop and I'm like, what on earth is going on here?
Yes.
You know? So I can only imagine what somebody else is, that's not earning what I'm earning is also going through.
Yes.
So more people are joining that SASSA queue.
Yes.
And we need to be creative about how we're going to fund those people to support them until they become in a position where they can self-sustain themselves.
Yes.
A self-sustainable position.
So. Yeah.
Yeah. I think the overall takeout for today is essentially willpower, vote for a DA, vote out the ANC.
Yes.
Let's make sure that we get people into positions that will do what is needed.
And we can turn it around.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And the return on that investment is dignity, is jobs. It's environment that is conducive for people to live dignified lives just by voting for the Democratic lines. That is guaranteed.
That's what it takes. I must say though, your passion for the work that you do really does give me hope, and it gives me hope that we have such incredible public reps sitting in such important spaces that are fighting for everyday South Africans. And so, from the bottom of my heart, I just want to say thank you for your dedication and your passion. And we are so proud of you.
Yes.
And keep on fighting. And if you need us, we are also, we will come and we stand right behind you. So thank you for all the work that you do.
Yes, colleagues, thank you very much. It was nice having you guys here, Powerhouse. But if there's one takeout, vote out the ANC.
Yes.
Vote for the DA. At home, also don't forget to like, comment, subscribe, and make sure you are registered to vote and vote for the DA. Vote out the ANC.
Yes.
Thank you.
There we go.
Yes. Amen. Thank you.